At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Elbridge Colby, the author of the new book, The Strategy of Denial, American Defense in an Age of Great Power Conflict. The great power of concern is China, the People's Republic of China. Aggressive, predatory, and non-transparent. What is the purpose of the U.S. strategy in this conflict, in any larger conflict here in the 21st century? Bridge, you make it very clear that the U.S. government must provide security, freedom, and prosperity. And in doing that, they construct a coalition in Asia or around the world against the hegemon or the potential hegemon of China. So in constructing that, is it appropriate for the U.S. to have other filters for other countries in the coalition? Must those other countries be secure, free, and prosperous? Must they be democracies?
No, actually not at all. I mean, I think the goal of policy is to promote Americans' security, freedom, and prosperity, and that may require affiliating with countries that are not themselves Republican systems like ours. I mean, obviously, I think we all wish for other countries to be governed in a civilized and kind of liberal and Republican way. But that's not the goal of American foreign policy. And I really try to root my argument. You know, one of the things that I've been very frustrated by over the last generation, I would say, is that American foreign policy discussion has become very attenuated in its connection to concrete American interests. I mean, you know, we're talking here about a war with another superpower, the most powerful state to emerge in the international system since the United States itself, a war with which could be apocalyptic. And my own instincts tend towards the non-interventionist. I have not been a fan of the vast majority of military interventions in the last generation. But on the other hand, if we are going to have the kind of society that we aspire to have and have since the beginning of the Republic and in some ways even before, we need not only to be kind of physically secure from direct attack, which I think is relatively straightforward for the United States, both because of our oceans and our large military and nuclear forces, but also we need to be free and prosperous and determine our own fate. I mean, I think that's the kind of the point I make is it should be, you know, the purpose of our foreign policy should be to allow us to be strong, wealthy, and free enough to kind of, you know, I'm using an archaic term, but I mean in the general sense, kind of manfully determine our own future. That is to say, and again, I don't mean any disrespect to women listeners, but just in the sense of that, you know, confidently and with a free and frank orientation, we can look to the future and determine our own fate. And we're not going to be able to do that if we're pinched sort of on our own shores and our economic future is determined abroad. And that's what I'm worried about is that China, which I have no hostility to China as such. In fact, the contrary, I'd probably inclined to the Sinophilic. But, you know, the reality is that it's a huge country, and it's betraying all of the evidences of how great powers tend to behave, which is arrogantly and assertively and with expansive ambition. And what they seem to be going for at a minimum is a regionally predominant position, which would allow them to essentially shape trade flows to their benefit, determine the rules of economic activity, economic security, and essentially Americans' jobs and freedoms and sense would be determined ultimately in Beijing. That is the plausible future, and we can already see how it's going out.
Quickly now, you make it very clear that the U.S. is no longer dominantly powerful, so that it needs to put together a coalition. And the filters for those coalitions, we've talked about democracy, not a filter, but the major filter is defensibility and cost and resolve. Those are the three majors. What is defensibility?
Defensibility is basically the ability to defend a country sufficient for it to hold on as a member of the coalition and essentially provide what it is that the coalition expects from it. So it's a little bit of a, it's a relative standard, but defensibility is not sort of objective in the sense that, you know, Great Britain in 1940 was able and willing to hold on despite being under, you know, U-boat strangulation and a blitz attack, you know, blitz campaign, right? But resolute enough, and their theory of victory was ultimately the other great powers were in, would intervene on their side, and they were, and that was borne out. If a country has a very fragile, sort of strategic orientation or level of resolve, then it's essentially becomes much harder to defend. So what we're talking about here is if we can provide Taiwan or the Philippines or Japan with a level of defense sufficient to keep them on side and fighting back in the event of an attack and contributing their national power to the collective effort to check Chinese domination, then they're being defended. That actually might be a pretty nasty scenario in the midst of the conflict, but that's what defensibility is.
Is cost a concern for the coalition? How much it would cost us to keep the member in? We have about a minute here.
Absolutely, cost is, because the critical thing that, given the importance of the United States in the anti-hegemonic coalition, cost, especially for Americans, is critical because our interests in Asia, while exceptionally important, are not existential. So we need to be able to correlate the costs Americans would run and risks Americans would incur and run by defending, say, Taiwan or the Philippines with a level of interest that's at stake. And that's critical. So we can't ask for too much sacrifice from the American people without a reasonable basis for it.
Very carefully, we are going to construct a coalition. And Bridge does in his book, mentioning these states in particular, Australia, India, Taiwan, South Korea, Vietnam, Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, Myanmar, New Zealand, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, all in or out of the coalition on the basis of defensibility, cost, and resolve.
We're going and power.
And power, thank you. And we're going to turn to the point of view of Beijing looking at this construction, this coalition that we're theoretically putting together now with the U.S. in the lead, knowing that in history coalitions have strengths and weaknesses, as Beijing knows. So what does, from Beijing's point of view, what does it look to weaken or undermine the coalition? The book is The Strategy of Denial, American Defense in an Age of Great Power Conflict. Elbridge Colby is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.